Hello and welcome to The Sopranos Show. I'm Gavin Bowen.
And I'm Hannibal Diaz.
Today we will be looking at Season 4, Episode 5 of The Sopranos, titled Piomai. This episode aired October 13th, 2002. It was written by Robin Green and Mitchell Burgess, and it was directed by Henry Bronckteyn. Here is the HBO synopsis for this episode. Checking out Ralph's promising new filly at the track, Tony displays a flair for horse racing strategy and discovers an unexpected affinity for the stable life. Adriana finds her rock club being used as a place of business for Chris and his pals. Meanwhile, a court artist incurs the wrath of Uncle Junior, and Janice feeds Bobby in his hour of need. Sorry, I started smiling at that because it's a little over the top.
Right.
Incurs the wrath of Junior. I don't know if...
Well...
Incurs the wrath.
It is a bit of an over the top little thread that we have there.
It is.
It's kind of funny that they even spent a storyline.
it's good though.
On Junior versus court sketch artist.
Right.
But yes, I agree with you. It is good. I like that.
Yeah. So we open this episode. Really good episode, I thought.
Oh yeah, me too.
Yeah. On the crazy horse, because one of the bigger plots of this is Adriana as informant Adriana.
Yeah.
And for her, the pressure is on as well as the paranoia. And we get that right at the top here.
Yeah, absolutely. And she will be going on a journey in this episode to try and deal with her dilemma the best way that she can. And she really does try.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
oh,
to
yeah.
sort of figure it out and make this something that won't, you know, screw over Christopher and the lifestyle that she has come to know and the family that she's come to know.
Mm-hmm.
But the feds aren't really having it, and they're putting the pressure on pretty bad. And also, unwittingly, Chris and his compatriots are not helping her out either at all.
Right. Tony and Syl show up at her club right at the top of the scene, and we get this moment of paranoia from Adriana as she's closely like a hawk watching Tony receive this phone call, which
exactly.
is just an innocent phone call from Carmela. But the camera angle shifts, it tilts, and the music becomes distorted. And she believes Tony is talking about taking her out.
That's right. You know, and I forgot that they did that in this scene.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a strong stylistic choice that you don't normally see. And the dialogue from Tony,
mm-hmm.
evil Tony,
yeah.
is kind of funny.
Yeah.
I'm going to fuck her face up before I kill her and like all this other like really dark stuff. But
right.
Yeah, I mean, I would understand how if you're Adriana, you would not know what other people know, possibly. And
mm-hmm.
at any time, it could be discovered what you're doing. So you have to be really scared if you're her.
Mm-hmm. And then we get Christopher arriving with Furio as they haul a man named Giovanni. It's key to note that name
mm-hmm.
right in that hallway. And Adriana sneaks, not really because she wants to get something for the feds, but now she's even become more curious about Christopher's life and what
yeah.
he does for work. She's not like snooping at the window because she's like, well, I'll have this in my pocket for the feds if they need something. No, because it directly involves Christopher. But she does witness them beating the shit out of this guy, Giovanni.
Right. And I think what's really important with the Giovanni beating is that before, it's not even like Adriana had to turn a blind eye, because it's not like Chris would do any of his Soprano family business around her.
Except at the construction site with
right.
Patsy. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. That's that is a good point. But for the most part, you know, she would not be mixed in with anything other than just
right.
sort of seeing stolen goods and,
mm-hmm.
you know, just sort of certain implications. But now she really is in a position to kind of see incidents like this beating, incidents like what she witnessed at the construction site all the time, because
mm-hmm.
they are using Crazy Horse as a front.
Right.
And she's a manager. The manager.
I find it very surprising, though, that Tony was in this first scene.
Yeah,
that
me too.
He was here so closely tied to this beating given to this guy.
Right.
It seems inappropriate for him to be there as boss.
Yeah, because he's too big. Sure.
Exactly. Well, moving right along, we are seeing a small snippet here, and then we'll get back to it, of Janice and Bobby. Well, basically, Janice spying on Bobby and what's going on with him. They really do live close. I mean, I know right. they mentioned they were neighbors, but she can eavesdrop yeah. rather easily from the kitchen window.
She can snoop.
Yeah, snooping yeah. away. But then back to Adriana. She's at the hair salon.
Mm-hmm.
Gets a call from Agent Deborah/Danielle. And now she's really in it. I mean, like, they're calling her at places where she just randomly might be.
Mm-hmm.
It is a little disturbing for her. And I also thought, kind of an unnecessary joke here of Deborah, Agent Deborah, to play on Adriana saying there were guys watching her yeah. outside the salon.
Yeah.
That didn't seem nice.
I mean, in general, the feds are really, I mean, the feds have never been very likable in this series. You definitely sort of see them as Tony would see them, mm-hmm. as just assholes that are trying to interfere with him for no reason.
Except for Dwight.
Yeah.
For the most part.
But even Dwight Harris, I feel, is kind of a jerk, you know, when it comes to Adriana.
When it comes to Adriana,
not
for
with
sure.
Tony,
yeah.
who he, for whatever reason, admires and is nice to.
Mm-hmm.
But Adriana, they're just such a, like, and especially since she's so helpless, and to see them, like, bully her so much in yeah. this episode is, like, pretty sad.
Yeah. We get more of that later on, but moving along, Janice, she decides to get up. Get out and go, because who does she see in that previous shot of Bobby's but Jojo from season one, Mikey Palmisi's wife?
That's right.
Isn't that interesting?
You know, it's so funny that I knew the character was vaguely familiar, but I didn't really think about it until you said just now.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. That's who it is. And Mikey. It's the same actress.
Right.
And
she even mentions it, though.
Yes, she does mention yeah. Mikey. And she also actually appeared in From Where to Eternity, but it's a deleted scene, because I wanted to double check to see if this was the same actress, because mm-hmm. it looked so much like her, and it was, but she's credited with a deleted scene from Where to Eternity,
oh.
which is interesting. So she's in a few episodes here.
Look at that. You yeah. know, I never knew in my previous viewings of the show that we ever saw that character again after Mikey Palmisi got shot.
Right. So. Season four.
Yeah.
Random.
Wow.
But this is kind of funny, because Bobby, for some reason, he's got the ladies all over him.
Yeah.
I mean, we got two single women here.
Right.
Who are clearly throwing themselves at his feet.
Yeah.
You know?
Bobby's got some options.
He does have some options. Jojo or Janice.
Yeah.
Mikey Palmisi's ex-wife.
Right.
Widowed wife. Or Janice.
Who killed Richie April.
Right.
So
and threw Ralphie down the stairs.
Exactly.
But I just love what Janice is doing here, because it's so obvious, you know, mm-hmm. to the audience
that, yeah.
you know, she's trying to kick Jojo out, and she's trying to mess with her by bringing mm-hmm. up her son's, you know, use of Ritalin
yeah.
for probably ADHD. And
yeah.
she's just being snarky. Bobby's not realizing any of it. And yeah.
Yeah, but Jojo does get it, and
yes.
this, like, one-up womanship
right.
campaign by Janice is really funny, but also it really reveals that she is going for Bobby. She has targeted Bobby.
Fully.
You know, I guess we had this set up when she talked about how much she admired him, and she was so moved by his, you know, display of grief for Karen.
Mm-hmm.
But this has really transitioned into Janice being like, no, I want to be this guy's next wife.
Yep. That's for sure. Jojo does leave. Janice was going to do the dishes. You know, she offered to. And then once Jojo leaves, you can clearly see Janice is like, well, fuck that. I don't need to do the dishes anymore.
Exactly.
And instead pulls out Karen's last ZD,
right.
which sets Bobby off again. So Bobby, still emotional. Can Janice do anything about it?
Yeah.
We will see.
And I really like his crying acting, I
yeah.
have to say.
It is. It's kind of blubbery. It's
yeah.
very... But it's so, like, my heart
yeah.
aches.
Exactly. No,
Bobby.
Mine too.
Yeah. Adriana meets up with the agents at this little coffee shop, diner, pastry shop thing, place. And I love the start of it when Danielle says,
hi, Adriana. Eat shit, Danielle. Whatever the fuck your name is.
Love that. Because
yeah.
there's kind of a little bit of payoff at the end of the scene. after that. Because Danielle eventually, Agent Deborah, leaves. She's done.
Mm-hmm.
She no longer has to be associated with this case. And Adriana is a little bit hurt that she's leaving.
Yeah.
It's like for Adriana, it's a catch-22 because her bond that she made with Deborah is so strong. But at the same time, fuck her.
Yeah. It's almost a little bit of like a Stockholm Syndrome situation.
Kind of, yeah.
But yeah, we have the introduction of this new character, San Severino.
Mm-hmm.
And in this scene, you know, it is kind of funny also, in a mean way, the way that they fuck with Adriana a bit, saying that, you know, Big Pussy isn't in the program. Uncle Richie, not in the program.
Right.
Implying that they're both dead.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're really getting into her head about, like, Chris might be in danger. You know, maybe someone wants to kill him.
Yeah.
And she needs to be, you know, concerned about that because when the mob guys find out that you're betraying them or doing something that they don't like, well, you will disappear and it won't be the program.
Yeah. Draymond De Mateo is doing a great job in this scene. There's even a moment before she's even really crying. You can see her eyes are welling up.
Yeah.
And she even gets like a tear caught in her like long lashes and mascara. It just is a noticeable like how far this character has come. Especially for Drea De Mateo, starting out just as a hostess, and her character name is Hostess, to major plot character of The Sopranos.
Absolutely,
it's
kind
of intense.
Yeah, because, of course. It's cool that you referenced that. When we first saw Drea De Mateo in this series, she was not a character. She was not Adriana, girlfriend of Christopher. She was just a hostess.
Yeah. It's great.
Yeah.
But they basically, Dwight tells her to area of focus is the Soprano household. Get there as much as you can.
Right.
Get us info on Carmela's cooking to start.
I mean, I really question why Adriana, I guess she tries. Just my big question throughout this episode was, what do the feds not understand about Adriana's like position in this? Because I feel like she has a good defense, which is I am not a made woman, even though there is no such thing.
Right.
You know, I'm not involved in Chris's, you know, illegal activities. Like, why would I know anything? Why would he tell me anything? Do you think Carmela Soprano knows the details of what Tony's doing as boss? You know, she has a pretty good defense, but no one really seems to be able to like just come out and say like, yeah, maybe she wouldn't really know anything.
Yeah. Well, the power of fear and
holding
the heroin and cocaine usage over her head is big.
Also, as I said that, I realized too that a major part of their strategy is in the end to use Adriana to really get Christopher, who of course would know everything there is to know.
That's true. Yes. Opening scene here with Tony taking a taste of Carmela's cooking. And Carmela bringing up that she wants to move on this stock that Brian actually mentioned to her, something that could be really big for them if they only drop $10,000, which Tony says it's not really in the cards right now, don't have it. And yet we see him the very next shot running out in the middle of the night to his duck stash.
The duck stash.
His duck supply.
Of cash. Yeah. Yeah.
And pulls out what appears to be roughly $10,000.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So he doesn't want to give her the money because what does he want to do with it? But next scene at the horse race and use it towards Ralphie's new purchase of Piomai, which we were introduced to in Christopher.
Yep.
And Ralph said he was going to buy the horse. He bought the horse. It's a racehorse. We've mentioned this before. Tony's feelings towards animals,
right?
The ducks, other, you know, even Pussy's wife, Angie's dog,
right?
You know, with all that intimidation scene, he still he still loved the pup.
Yeah, he Tony has a real affinity for the animals. Tony,
he does.
Yeah,
and we see it here with Piomai,
right?
You have just a really funny discussion here because we got a lot of guys in this scene and they're talking about how we're gonna win this race for Piomai, because lately she's been losing ever since Ralph purchased her. And Tony has the suggestion, we'll hold her back.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's like, fuck that. He's like, okay.
Yeah.
Fine. That's cool.
But yeah, Tony, a bit of a horse racing expert, it would seem.
Right.
And also we have a great line from Ralph here, which is just so killer and ridiculous.
And tell that midget not to be shy with the whip.
If only his mother had taken that advice.
Oh, it's so good that Ash said that too. It's a nice line at the end there.
It's true, because all those guys standing there are like, wow, that's like a little much, Ralph.
Everybody looks at him and it's like, Jesus.
Yeah.
Fuck. So before the race, we get a scene with Junior and Janice here. And I love Junior and Murph. Like, their relationship is, you can see they're adding a little bit more Murph into Junior's scenes.
Yeah, a little more Murph.
A little more Murph. And it's very funny. And Janice comes in with none other but JoJo's chicken marsala.
Right.
Which is really funny because fucking Janice. Like, of course Janice would take a dish that belonged to somebody else and bring it to Junior as a favor of something to show her nicety to Junior.
Janice is so shameless.
Yeah. Yeah, she even knows. She remembers exactly how it should be heated up. Let's Murph know. And the look that Murph gives to Junior when he's going to go grab his jacket, but Junior's like, go get the car.
Right.
Really good. He just stares him down as he walks away.
Yeah.
It's really nice. I just think it's funny now.
You know, it's funny too. I was on Wikipedia and apparently Murph is actually like an old mobster himself.
No.
Like, that's the Seriously? Idea behind the character, that he's like an old...
Oh, the character, yeah, not the actor.
Oh, not the actor.
Oh, okay.
Not the actor.
What?
Oh, but by the way, total side note, some of the actors in Sopranos are actual criminals.
Yes.
With records.
Yes.
Tony Sirico, for example, it's well known, has a criminal record.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, just, it's hilarious because you picture that old man Murph and you're like... What was he doing in the mob? When was he ever like intimidating people?
Or, yeah, that's true.
Doing this thing. But hey, he's probably made.
Yeah, I guess so. And I also caught this, a phrase that Junior has used before.
When? Waiting like patience on a monument.
That's right. Yeah.
You know.
I wrote that note down. I mean, I wrote that line down. I like that line a lot.
I've mentioned before how much like Shakespeare is in The Sopranos, especially with Junior scenes. I mean, that's directly from Twelfth Night, so.
Oh, yeah. Hey, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
But yes, the scene continues, and still we get these little funny details. Junior's grabbing Murph's jacket, and as he's talking to Janice about Bobby, and Janice is talking about how Bobby, you know, is suffering, but we're really trying. She's like, I really helped him, you know, sort of get rid of Karen's things. Junior's going through Murph's jacket and pulling out all of his change.
So great.
Like the smallest, pettiest thing to do.
Yeah.
But now Junior's thinking, okay, I can't rely on Bobby.
Right.
Like, he's really bad.
Yeah.
That Janice is helping him out. I mean, that's how bad it is.
Yeah, and we all know that, and we'll get into it a little bit more, but Junior does not trust Janice.
No.
So at the track, Tony is talking to financial advisor,
Ginsburg.
Like his own guy. Yeah, Ginsburg. And basically Ginsburg explains that this trust that Carmela is pushing for will benefit her way more than it benefits Tony, particularly in the event of divorce.
Death.
And death.
Yeah.
But divorce is mentioned, I believe.
Yes. What he's saying is that with divorce, you can't change it.
Right.
She would get it.
Yeah.
And if you're pissed at her and you don't want her to have it, she'd still have it.
So Tony takes that in. Obviously, he does not like that. Or, you know, it's like, oh, death or divorce and Carmela gets it all and I, you know, don't get benefited at all. He's concerned. And he was already pretty wary of this whole thing. But real quick, what I'm realizing now as we're talking about it with the divorce issue is that maybe Tony is concerned, especially with all of the stuff that he does that pisses Carmela off, that she may be more motivated to go the divorce route if she knows that she's guaranteed all these assets.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
But anyway, Paiomai wins.
Paiomai does win. Before Paiomai wins, though... So funny, this random shouting from Ralph from across the way.
Tony!
Post time is in 1 minute.
Anthony!
It doesn't even... And then it cuts back to Tony. He doesn't even hear him.
Right.
So good.
It's really comical.
It really is. Yeah, but Paiomai comes from behind. And Ralph is very happy.
Right.
He's a rich man now.
Yeah, and very significant, this come from behind,
yeah,
not going full out whole race. Of course, this was Tony's suggestion, and it has paid off here.
Right. Next scene after the race. Pretty funny that Ralph has set up his housekeeper maid as the owner,
right,
of the horse.
Yeah.
And she has no idea why she's there.
Exactly.
It's really good. But Ralph tells Tony, you were right, and I'm going to give you a taste of some of my winnings. And after learning that it was accidental, it was completely accidental, he mm-hmm. still gives Tony a super large. Well, I don't know if you looked at the wad. He doesn't even count it.
Yeah.
He just takes like half of it and gives it to Tony.
Yeah.
Just like, that's what you deserve.
Right.
Which is significant for later
Absolutely.
On.
Yeah. Implications for later.
Yeah.
It's funny too how Tony makes a big phony show of being like, oh, your money's no good.
It's like,
oh, I don't want it. Then he's just like, okay, I'll take it.
Yeah, of course. Everybody was standing there like, he's going to get it.
Right.
Of course he's going to get it. And he gives it subsequently to Carmella.
Right.
Which is interesting because we just had a scene about how Ginsburg's like, oh, you don't want to do this because it'll give Carmella all the money. And then he's literally counting out the money that he's giving to mm-hmm. Carmella in the next scene.
Right.
So that was a nice pairing there of these two scenes.
Yeah.
But he's ready to sign those papers. And I love the bit that Gandolfini does here, taking the time, looking at the last sheet and mm-hmm. being like, yep, that's it. I'm done.
Right. Yeah. I noticed that too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's just like, I'm not going to sign that one.
Right. So basically he's signing every paper except the one that really counts.
The trust.
As per Ginsburg.
Right.
And Carmella is very upset, understandably.
Here's the thing.
Yeah.
I've seen The Sopranos before, so maybe somewhere in the back of my mind, I knew he was going to say this.
Mm-hmm.
But when I was watching again and Ginsburg was explaining about the different types of trust there
right.
are. And Tony says here, oh, we could try another one, like in vitro or something.
Right.
I knew when Ginsburg said that word that he said to Tony,
yeah.
that Tony was going to say in vitro.
Yeah.
I was like, he's going to get that mixed up.
Yep.
He's gonna say in vitro.
Yeah, well, there's better ones. In vitro something.
It's great. He also, when he's explaining to Carmella after the in vitro thing, or no, I think it's right before, whatever.
Yeah.
He gets another great one in. When he's repeating a word that he heard from Ginsburg, but he says irrevocable. Like, he just says it in a weird way. The word is irrevocable.
Yes.
But Tony doesn't say it quite right.
It's irrevocable.
It is really good. And then we just get this very goofy float like a butterfly
right.
moment of trying to make light of the issue. Mm-hmm. But Carmella's so pissed.
Yeah.
It is kind of out of nowhere.
Right. I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's definitely just trying to make light of the whole situation. Carmella sees right through it. It reminds me very much of our previous fight that we saw them have with equating love with money, that mm-hmm. whole thing from last week's episode, because Carmella feels loved when the money is flowing in her direction.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it is cut off, you know, she feels less loved. So, hey, again, she's just as guilty of it as Tony is. They
Absolutely.
Both do this equating love with money thing.
Yeah. I mean, it's really becoming a thorn in their side.
Right.
Of their relationship.
So then we see Adriana pulling a trick that I pulled many times in like third grade.
Right.
Pretending to be sick
yeah.
to get out of going someplace. In my case, it was elementary school. In Adriana's case, it's going out. To dinner with Tony, Carmella, and Christopher,
mm-hmm.
because of course she doesn't want to put herself in a position to hear anything, to be questioned by the feds about anything.
Right.
So she's really trying to do what she needs to do to protect everybody. We see at the top of the scene that she's not sick at all, but she hears Chris coming in and she puts on this whole act. She's got her like prop ready, you know, the thing that she puts on her forehead. And
yeah, yeah.
Chris is extremely disappointed, you know, because he, of course, sees this dinner, right, as just further confirmation that he's rising up, that he's in the, as he puts it, inner sanctum.
Right. And that inner sanctum is what the feds know and what the feds want.
Right.
And yeah, Adriana, like you said, is protecting everybody involved, whether Christopher realizes it or not, but he's pissed, goes for his H.
Yeah.
And it looks like he's not going to dinner either.
It's just so funny, too, the line that he has right as he's going for his heroin.
Yeah.
Nothing ever goes my way.
Yeah. He does say it in a way too that's like very childish.
Yeah, exactly. Like very childish and like a child from like the 50s.
Right, know? Leave it to Beaver.
Like. Yeah, but very un-Leave It to Beaverish is his shooting up.
Before we go any further with today's episode, we want to introduce to you our interview with Maureen Van Zandt. It was great to talk to Maureen. She was simply wonderful. And we actually learned a whole lot, especially about the casting process for Gabriella Dante. But without much further ado, we bring you Maureen Van Zandt. Well, we're here with Maureen Van Zandt. She played Gabriella Dante and appeared in 28 episodes of The Sopranos and 5 seasons. Maureen, how did you get involved with the show?
Well, as everyone knows, my husband, Stephen, was playing Silvio from first season. Mm-hmm. And second season, they needed a new wife for him. He had one in the first season, but she, I don't know what happened. I don't think she ever had any lines or anything, and it was probably very minimal. And the casting director knew that I was an actor, actually, from the actor who played Father Phil.
Oh.
Paul Schulze, who was my scene partner in acting class, and he had mentioned, you know, that he had worked with me. And so they approached me about auditioning, and I did, and I auditioned with quite a few other ladies, and I absolutely didn't think I would get it because I think I was the least Italian looking of all of them. but I did. It was a very, very crazy and very grueling process, and I was cast, which was a huge shock to me, but a very nice one.
Wow. I would have just thought you're Stephen Van Zandt's wife. Why not just go with Maureen?
No, they were very, very particular about who they cast. And I remember that there was an instance where I think Edie Falco's mother had auditioned and they didn't cast her for some reason. You know, they were always very specific about who they wanted on the show. And that's why, you know, I was shocked that I got it, because I didn't think I was probably the type that would be, you know, the stereotypical Italian housewife, mob wife or whatever. But, you know, I auditioned with about 200 people, and then they cut it down to, I think, 4 finalists. And we had to go up against in front of the entire Sopranos crew. You know, everybody who worked on the show had to watch us audition, you know, the final people. And I don't know if they voted or if it was just, you know, Mr. Chase who made the decision. But anyway, it was a really nice surprise.
Yeah, that's incredible. Yeah, completely unexpected that it was such a strenuous process. And of course, I have to ask, what was it like acting alongside your husband? Did that make things easier or harder?
We didn't actually do that many scenes together. I was mostly with the women, and the scenes I was in with him most of the time were sort of crowd scenes at, you know, christenings and funerals and parties and stuff like that. So we didn't have much interaction except in, I guess, that one episode where Stephen, Silvio became the acting, leader when Tony was incapacitated. Right. And it was a bit strange, I think, you know, when you know someone that well to pretend they're another person, but you know, that's what actors do. I mean, I have a theater company and I work with all the actors who are friends of mine in real life. So you get used to it. You just have to, you know, be in the moment and, you know, believe in what you're doing.
And was this your first big role? And what was it like acting professionally, especially surrounded by this kind of cast?
Well, I had been acting since I was a kid. I was on Broadway when I was quite young. And then I became a ballet dancer, so I kind of stepped away from it for a while. But I did theater, I did hair.
That's great.
Yeah, you know, I'm on Broadway in the late 60s. It was my first TV show, but I had done a lot of theater. I'd obviously done a lot of ballet performances, so I'd always been on stage. But the film situation was a new one for me, so that was interesting.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, it's got to be interesting for it to be like one of the greatest shows too.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think I hit the jackpot. I couldn't have gotten on a better show for first acting, TV acting job. So that was kind of a miracle. And it was something I had to get used to. It's a whole different kind of acting than you do on stage, obviously. So it was quite an experience, a real learning experience for me.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking to the learning experience aspect of it, did you ever talk to any of the other actors in the cast about the craft? Was there any time where you like asked for advice, or they just provided kind of insight into their technique or anything like that?
I don't think that really happened. I mean, we mostly were not a really deadly serious crew. You know, everybody kind of hung out and had fun and laughed. But I do remember the first scene that I did was with Edie Falco. Mm-hmm. And right before we were going to shoot the first take, I said to her, you know, this is my first TV acting job. And she said, nobody has to know. So that was Edie's advice. Like, don't let them think that you have any kind of vulnerability. Just go ahead and do it. And, yeah. and that was, you know, it was great. It was a great thing that she said. And it actually really helped me at the moment, because, you know, it made me think, you know, I'm an actor. I may have not acted on TV before, but I've acted other places and I can do this. So I thank her for that. She was always very, you know, very supportive, you know, mm-hmm. to work with, and everybody was.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. We're currently on season four, and there is a moment where, you know, you as Gabriella get a pretty big scene where you go off on Father Phil. And was there any favorite memory that you have on set, or favorite episode that you might have had?
Well, I think probably the one I had the most fun doing, and it wasn't one where I had a big part, because it was another huge group thing. It was Livia's funeral, which I guess was season three.
That's right.
You would know better than I do. I'm very confused. But no, I knew it was the second. I came on in season two, so I knew it was the next one after that. And it was just, you know, because we were laughing so hard, even though it was such a serious, serious sure. subject matter. But, you know, as you know, the lines in that scene were just classic. And Michael Imperioli's stoned out rap, we just could not stop laughing. And they had to keep cutting, because, and we all got yelled at. And Steven especially really got, you know, got his ass kicked for that one, because he was the ringleader of the laughing, I think. But so that's probably the most fun I had doing it. And of course, I love the episode where, you know, where Silvio became the acting boss, because we had, sure. you know, some fun scenes to do together. But I would say the Livia funeral scene, you know, just because I think the writing was so brilliant and so funny, and we all just had a great time that day.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. That was an amazing episode and great scene there at the end with Christopher and everything. And I was just curious, you know, as fans, we have this kind of conversation amongst ourselves all the time, but just for someone who was so deeply involved in the making of the show, did you actually have a favorite character?
Oh, God, I never thought about that, but I can't not say James is, you know, Tony Soprano. I think it was such a brilliant character with so many different levels, and he was so brilliant at it. But I think I have a soft spot in my heart for Uncle Junior.
Yeah.
Of course. Yeah. What do you think about the fact that, you know, now it's 11 years since it's been off the air. People still love the show. They talk about it all these years. I mean, we made this podcast because we enjoy it so much. Did you ever expect, you know, it to carry on like this during, you know, maybe even the second season? I'm sure there were still people thinking, like, is this something that, you know, we'll see later on in years to come as one of the greatest shows ever?
I think when they shot the pilot, everyone involved, and I, of course, was not involved at the time, thought, like, this is so crazy. They didn't know what was going to happen. I don't think anyone had any expectations. But I think once I started seeing the, you know, the quality of the writing and the acting and how it was just so, so unique. I mean, at the time, now a lot of shows have sort of followed the, if you want to call it a formula, but so many shows have you know, emulated Sopranos. But I just think it was so unique. And I think that also people seem to be just totally interested in the mob life. And I thought the combination of the family and the business was such a brilliant, brilliant thing, because I don't think people before ever had a look into what the personal lives that these guys were like, that they had families like everybody else, kids that were driving them crazy and wives driving them crazy and in-laws driving them crazy. And I think that was just so brilliant. And yes, I think right away I felt that this was something that was going to be, you know, remembered for a long, long time.
That's fantastic. Yeah. We're so grateful that you took the time out to give us a call. And also just online, you seem to engage with fans pretty readily. And that's just, it's really nice and amazing of you to do, really.
Oh, well, it's fun. And the truth is, I wouldn't be on Twitter or any social platform if I wasn't going to engage with people. You know, I don't want to go on there and just promote everything I'm doing. I enjoy talking to people and you know, don't enjoy fighting with some people,
sure.
Which I often get into, but you know, the Sopranos fans have always been so fantastic to, you know, to interact with. And, you know, I hope it keeps happening. It's a great group of people. And the fact that they're so, you know, passionate and dedicated and know way, way more than I do. I mean, I see, you know, discussions online and I'm thinking like, I don't remember that character. I don't remember that scene, but that they know everything. And I think it's just so cool to love something that much and for a piece of art to affect people so strongly. So I love it.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. You did such an incredible job on the show. So thanks again for that. And thank you for your time this morning.
And thank you guys for having me on and thank you for keeping the flame alive.
So we don't really get a Mitchell Burgess, Robin Green dinner scene, other than I would guess this one right here with
That's
Bobby
right.
and his kids.
Yeah.
And Janice. So Janice picked up the kids like she said she was going to. She's made dinner for everyone. And, you know, she is really trying hard. She's trying hard with the kids, you know, asking them to share what they saw to Daddy. And that's kind of weird, too, because Bobby Jr. even gives this look like, she just call him Daddy, like,
right.
That's our dad, you're not involved. Like, I got that feeling from Bobby Jr.
Yeah.
But Bobby says, hey, you can stay and have dinner with us. The kids leave, and she's really forcing him out of this depression. Like,
right.
She's really trying to just yank him right out of it, because she tells him, I saw Junior. He's a little pissed. You don't really want him to be pissed.
Right.
You don't want to lose out on the opportunity you have right now to be Junior's side guy.
Yeah, exactly. And she is making some good points, you know, to Bobby. I'm just curious how much time has passed since Karen died, because he's still mourning, clearly. Mm-hmm. But also Janice is being so aggressive about being his, like, next woman.
Right.
But clearly it's been almost no time since they put Karen in the ground, especially if her last ZD is sitting there in the fridge.
Well, let's see. Columbus Day is October 10th,
mm-hmm.
So I have no idea.
Right, yeah, I was like, wait, what's the second part of that?
Yeah, I don't remember another date. We'll figure it out.
Yeah, sure.
I really like Janice's attempt here to empathize with Bobby when she says that her husband left her in Harpo, because I kind of believe her when she says, I had both barrels of a shotgun in my mouth.
Right.
Like, I kind of believe that's not hyperbole.
Yeah.
Like, I can imagine Janice was so, like, distraught that she
right.
had a shotgun in her mouth at one point.
She probably wasn't really going to go through with it or wasn't even really thinking about it.
No, it's
She's
a cry
just being
for,
dramatic.
Yeah, like
yeah.
her mom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, like her mom. That's a good point. So then Tony visits his new favorite place, the stables.
Yeah.
Ralphie consults Tony yet again, and Tony kind of gives his take on what they need to do
right.
to ensure that Piomai wins. And Ralphie's like, yeah, we'll employ that strategy.
Yes. The trainer suggests let Piomai just run the whole thing. And Ralph has such an insulting line here.
Yeah.
Where he says,
she should run it head to head.
Excuse me, senor. If I listened to you last time.
And she gives this look to Ralph that she's just like drilling the back of his head with her
right.
eyes. But Tony's like, no, I agree. Let her run the whole thing. Let
yeah.
her run the whole thing. Brian is here too. Because
that's right.
right at the top of it, Tony's walking with Brian. Brian's like, oh, I can understand why you don't want to live a trust like that. We can set you up with a living trust.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure. And Brian's very gullible. We already knew the first time we met Brian that Tony made that joke. Ralph makes a joke here at the expense of Brian's gullibility.
I thought that was great.
Yeah, and he gets taken
yeah.
at that point. Then he gets taken later as well when Pyomai actually wins again and he bet to show.
Yes.
So he won basically nothing.
Yeah.
Which is really funny.
Yeah. He's just poor Brian, totally out of his element here.
Yeah.
And the guys have a little bit of fun at his expense.
They do. I really liked to, I don't know if you noticed it when Tony said hi to Lois, the trainer. Mm. The way he said Lois, he says it like, Lois?
Yeah.
How's she doing today?
Right. Oh, yeah. I did notice that.
Lois?
Right. Yeah. It is kind of funny the way that he says that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we get this moment here.
Right.
After the win.
Yeah. My favorite moment of the episode, I have to say.
Yeah.
It's not dialogue, but it's just great how now we see that Tony is accustomed to taking his cut.
Yep.
For giving the advice that leads to Pyomai winning.
Mm-hmm.
So we have Ralphie. He hands over some cash after the big win.
Counts it out this time.
Yeah. Counts it out this time. Tony just looks down at his hand.
Doesn't even move.
Yeah.
He's just looking.
Just kind of frozen expression on his face. Ralphie's like, okay, not enough cash. Peels off a few more bills. Stacks them in Tony's palm. Same response from Tony.
Yeah, it's not enough.
Just stares at his hand. Like, keep it coming, motherfucker.
Yeah, it does.
And then you just see this, like, just horrible, like, smile on Ralphie's face. And he's, yeah. As he's just like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
More? Okay, so then he counts out, yeah, more. And I just love how this moment just seems to last for an eternity.
It really does. It's so over the top that it works.
Yes.
You know, like, I couldn't have stopped at two. He had to give him a third.
Yeah.
It worked so well.
And such a switch from that previous phoniness that Tony displayed when he was like, oh, you don't even have to give me a cut. Oh, whatever.
Right.
Now it's like, no, you better give me like half of what you won.
Right.
I'm the boss.
It's great. So good.
Yeah.
And so to make up for it, his previous attitude with Carmella and not giving her what she asked for, he comes home, sees a bunch of the flowers he bought for her, strewn upon the kitchen and the kitchen table. And he tells Carmella, because she obviously is still very upset, that he has come into some cash. But he lies here because he says he sold the Freeland Heights Avenue property.
Mm-hmm.
But we know that he has already sold that.
Right.
He's really just come into the cash from gambling on the horse racing. She doesn't need to know that, but he does have the cash, and she's pissed because the stock already split. It's too late.
Yeah.
And it would have worked out for them.
Right. And she's basically giving Tony silent treatment, right?
Yeah.
Like,
exactly.
This whole time. And also, I don't know if you noticed just how many flowers there are. Like, he really...
Yeah.
He bought a lot of flowers. He's really trying to butter her up, but she's not having it whatsoever.
Yeah. I tried to actually think, like, how much did that actually cost?
Hundreds and hundreds.
Hundreds of dollars, right.
Yeah.
If I received that from him, right, after asking for $10,000 to put in stock, but he has enough to buy a bunch of worthless flowers.
Yes.
If I was his wife, I'd be pissed.
Yeah, of course.
On top of it.
Of course.
Yeah. But then he grabs a what appears to be just a giant plate of either turkey or a ham.
Yes.
Like, it's either a turkey or a ham that he sits down at the table and dunks into mustard. And he's just left alone to eat.
Right.
Oh, but I will say, he does make this point when he's talking to Ginsburg that if he starts giving her everything that she wants, if she wants to bet on this stock or that stock, she'll just want to keep, if she keeps winning, she's just going to want to keep betting more and more and more. So I could see how part of it, that would be true, that Carmella, you know, would feel like, oh, we're into the money now. I know what I'm doing. Give me more money so I can make more bets.
Yeah.
On the stock market.
Also, Tony does know a bit about the psychology of gamblers.
That's true.
Yeah. So that's at play, I'm sure.
Right.
And from there, we get Bobby. Interesting scene with him.
Mm-hmm.
For the first time, we see Bobby being a bit gangsterish.
Yeah.
Because he's just been this big, soft, you know, kind of clown-like figure for so long.
Right.
In his silly hunting jacket in the Pine Barrens episode. And,
yeah.
You know, calzone with legs, as Tony first described
Shove
him.
Shove your quotation book up your ass.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Bobby has just been sort of a figure of fun. But here we get to see him be a bit of a gangster and kind of getting back in the game and realizing that, you know, it's time for him to step back up again and get back in Junior's good graces. So how does he do this? He pops in on this like labor organizer type guy. I mean, the guy's exact position isn't exactly important, but we just get that he has influence in like a construction union and they're backing a guy for president mm-hmm. that Junior does not support. So right. it is Bobby's job to make this guy understand that if he doesn't do what Junior wants him to do, there mm-hmm. will be severe consequences. And Bobby does a good job of getting that point across.
Oh, yeah, he does. I mean, you had to wonder, how did Bobby get involved in this?
Mm-hmm.
His dad's the assassin, right? His
That's
dad's
right.
the cold-blooded killer. Bobby's not that. But you can see that intimidation is one of his strong suits, especially when he ends with, I put a bullet in my head in three different locations.
Right.
In my head.
There's no misreading that one.
Yeah.
So we have more of Adriana really trying to get out of this predicament that she is in when she just flat out suggests to Chris that maybe they leave New Jersey altogether,
mm-hmm.
maybe set up in California, and that might be a good idea. But unsurprisingly, Christopher is not receptive to this suggestion.
Right. And she's a little overly concerned because of the result of the intimidation from the feds.
Right.
I mean, she wouldn't be doing this if they hadn't told her, oh, what was he doing in Yonkers? And it's like, she has no idea. So when he's coming back from being out late, now it's a concern. Now it's
True.
Like, what is he doing and how dangerous is it?
Right.
Yeah. So yeah again, her paranoia, her increased suspicion and doubt. Christopher definitely notices it and hates it.
Yeah. And right, that is a key point too, that she's been staying up all night waiting for him, very concerned. In the past, she wouldn't do this. In the past, she'd just go to sleep. Christopher comes home when he comes home.
Right.
But now she's like, wait, is he not coming home because he's dead?
Right. And then we cut to Adriana working at Crazy Horse, and Ralph, Vito, Patsy, the guys just show up.
Yeah, and Gene.
Yep, and Gene. At Crazy Horse, really all we get here, more, you know, confirmation that the guys are using this place and Adriana doesn't like it because she doesn't want to be involved. So she doesn't have anything for the feds. But all we get here really is a Vito fat joke.
Yes.
That's what we get.
That's right.
And I thought to myself, really? After all we went through in the wait last week.
Yeah.
And Mitchell Burgess and Robin Green are just like, fuck you. We're going to throw in another fat joke.
Yeah. These Sopranos writers, they're not afraid to shy away from the low blow.
Seriously.
Did you laugh out loud when Vito fell?
Yeah.
Okay,
yes.
I did.
I laughed out loud maybe a little bit more in a few scenes to come.
Right. No, I get that. I gotta say though, when Vito breaks the chair just from his weight, it wasn't, oh, fat man falling, ha ha ha. The sound of the chair breaking was actually funny. I don't know what it was, but there's just something about the way that like that sound effect plays.
I think big people tend to fall slower as well.
Uh-huh.
So the chair just, like, it took a while for it to all happen. And I think that's why the noise was so loud.
Yeah. And I gotta say,
it's like the creaking of the Titanic, you know, when it was going down.
Right. And I gotta say too, just the reaction of the guys just laughing.
Felt very genuine.
Asses off. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe it really was genuine laughter.
Maybe it was supposed to be a whole scene.
Yeah.
But it just ended with, maybe it's kind of like in Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Right.
When Harrison Ford was sick, and instead of having this huge bullwhip fight, he just shot the guy with the sword.
Right.
Maybe that was the thing where Vito just sat in the chair, it broke, and they're like, you know what? This is a better scene.
Wow. I doubt it, but I would love it if Joseph Gattascoli did an unscripted chair breaking.
Right.
That would be ridiculous. But then also, that would make the other actors in the scene really mean.
Yeah, it would. It would. That's true.
Yeah.
Maybe that didn't happen. So after Bobby did his job for Junior, he has to obviously meet up with Junior. So we're opening on Junior's house. As Murph is walking by, Junior's putting on a cardigan, and he says, it's a beautiful day in the neighborhood.
Yeah. Quoting Mr. Rogers.
Yeah. And then Junior sits down to watch his trial.
Yeah.
And above all else, Junior is pissed about the cartoon.
Yeah.
Drawn of him. And I gotta say,
yeah,
I don't know if you felt this way too. It looks like a cross between Chianese and David Chase.
Oh, interesting.
Look back at it.
I will.
It kind of looks a little bit like David Chase.
That's funny. I didn't really think about that. I didn't really notice it, but I will have another look.
Have another look. Yeah, for yeah. sure. But either way, he's pissed.
Yeah. And he does look ridiculous in that courtroom sketch.
It's hilarious.
Yeah.
But yeah, now Bobby, very confident that his intimidation worked on this 184 guy.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And Junior is very happy and proud to see him back in the saddle again.
Yeah, and part of this too is symbolized by, and it may have been in the barroom scene where you notice this for the first time, but definitely I noticed in this scene with Bobby, the symbolic trimming of the facial hair. So, you know, he had the 5 o'clock shadow when he was all super depressed about Karen still.
Yes.
But now that he's back into it and he's focused again and driven again and motivated again, he's clean shaven.
That's right. Yeah. And of course we get Junior questioning Janice's motives.
Yeah.
Janice? She's a pretty good cook. Since when? Everybody steers clear of her food.
Nah. She made lasagna the other night. Delicious. With sweet sausage along with the beef. I thought Karen's was good, but...
Sweet sausage? In little pieces? And a layer of basil leaves right underneath the cheese?
That's right.
That's Camilla's lasagna.
Fuck you talking about. You always think the worst of everybody, Junior.
Well, fine. Enjoy your lasagna. Just don't come running to me.
I just love this very minor thread that goes throughout the series of Junior just aggressively having no trust of Janice at all.
Yeah.
And just warning anyone that he can about getting close to Janice. Because,
right.
of course, he did the exact same thing with Richie April a couple seasons ago.
Yep.
So it's just fun to sort of see that maintained.
Yeah, it is. And then Murph falls. And I just kind of like that balance of the scene.
Right.
How it opens with Murph walking by Junior and the line, Mr. Rogers' neighborhood. And then he falls in the background.
Yeah. Again, poor Murph. He's just so goofy. How is he ever like a real gangster?
Exactly.
So we're back at the Crazy Horse and Adriana complains to Chris about the guys using it as a meeting spot. But Chris tells her that, you know, he thinks it's a great thing. There's no problem. Also orders her to dinner with Tony and Carmela. I guess they did their rain check. And he's like, hey, I don't care if your mother's dying. We're having dinner with Tony and Carmela. So Adriana really can't get out of that one.
Right.
Also, we get a return to the chair gag.
I feel like it's a punchline.
Yes.
Like, I feel like that was the punchline there for
right.
Adriana to sit in it in a very serious scene.
Right.
And have Christopher laugh.
Right. Had the exact same reaction that the other guys had when the chair was broken.
Yeah.
I mean, another funny thing about this, such a ridiculously over-the-top dick move to completely destroy the chair. And then they put it back together and left it as if they hadn't broken that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very important note in this moment, too, is that Chris does believe Tony handed him his father's killer.
That's right.
That's a big note, is that Christopher says, I'd follow him into hell.
Right.
So, yes, yeah. Tony, it worked.
It worked.
It worked for Tony. Whatever, you know, whoever that guy was, it worked. Because now Christopher is super ass loyal.
Yeah.
Which also hurts Adriana.
Of course.
Because if the feds are really trying to get Chris, what's Chris going to do?
That's a good point. Yeah. So Tony's game, maybe it wasn't even a game. Well, either way, it was a strategy to keep Christopher close and even closer delivering, you know, the father's killer. Absolutely, Chris is feeling very indebted to Tony.
Yeah. Did you notice, or have you noticed, that in the trial scenes that we've had so far, Junior's trial scenes, I feel like they're focusing on the jury a lot during it. And I can't remember, but I'm very interested to see if anything comes of that, because obviously intimidation is their game. And now Bobby's in the courtroom, right? And we just saw Bobby do some pretty heavy intimidation. And I always think like, okay, I had a moment where I was like, maybe something's going to come down the pipe there. But regardless, all Junior cares about is the cartoonist again.
That's right.
And he gives him such a look.
Yeah.
I don't say he incurs the wrath of, but he definitely gives him a stare. And I took a peek at what he was drawing, and this sketch makes him look like the Penguin. Like, his nose is really crooked and pointy. His glasses, it looks penguin-esque.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that. And just such a perfect expression. I wonder how many takes it took to get it just right. But that is the dirtiest look I've ever seen anyone give anyone. That so look that Junior aims at the courtroom sketch artist.
Yeah, the courtroom sketch artist, Adam's apple.
Yes.
Kind of just a little gulp.
Right. There,
which is really good.
Yeah.
You know, in this next scene with Adriana, it's very interesting to see how in these moments that she's being picked up by the feds or called by the feds, it starts off by Adriana being on the phone talking to her mom.
Right.
And like being mad at her mom, arguing with her mom, which is very, I think, very funny.
I don't care what your psychic said. Come on, if the guy don't call back within the first 48 hours. No, don't. Don't call him, Mom. Because I don't want to hear about it.
Yeah.
It's a character that we are familiar with, by the way. We know the mom.
We do. And it's a good, it's just a good structuring of like the opening of a scene, I feel. Would you agree?
I agree. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and it just further emphasizes that the feds are very good at catching Adriana completely off guard. She's never expecting it. She's always a little bit distracted. So it's extra shocking when they just appear and it's like, okay, now it's time to talk. And yeah, that's got to be horrible, you know, no matter who you are, to just have these people pop up randomly and you never know when it's going to happen.
Yeah. And now, you know, she is mirroring the same position Big Pussy was in, that we know other guys have been in, sitting in the car with the Fed, giving them information.
Right.
And Dwight, call him Dwight from now on.
Sure.
Dwight asks her if she's heard of the name Giovanni.
Right.
And of course, at the very top of the episode, she heard the guys bring in this dude named Giovanni.
Exactly. And beat him up.
So she does know who Giovanni is. She did see what happened to Giovanni, but she says no. She does, however, give up some information about Patsy. And I thought, well, this is kind of a good idea. She can just give them little bits of information about all the other guys that are indirect to Christopher. And she can save, you know, some skin here.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, she's doing the best that she can to play both sides. Mm-hmm. But this is a pretty important crossing of a line here in this scene. I think that this is really the first time that she's genuinely given them something. Now, you know, you and I both know she's not really giving them anything, but still you have to question, okay, is this the beginning of a slippery slope? Will she continue to give more information, more and kind of bigger insights into the criminal enterprise? And also too, I mean, you just see how she has no way out. She's really forced into it. After she kind of pushes aside the Giovanni thing, they just sit there, you know, just kind of implying like, hey, you're not leaving this car until you give us something.
Right.
So we get our conclusion of the Janice and Bobby storyline in this episode, and they decide to have family dinner again. Janice offers to prepare Karen's last ziti, but Bobby's just not ready yet.
Yeah, it's still something that is dear to him. She recognizes it. I mean, Janice is not being bad.
Right.
I would say. You know, we know Janice can be manipulative, untrustworthy, but in these moments, she really has feelings for Bobby. And when he says, I'm not ready for that, she understands.
Yeah.
She gets it.
Yeah, she does. And I think that she also sees, just in offering the ziti from the freezer, that this is a major symbol. So as long as he refuses to eat this last ziti, he's still hanging on to his wife, and he doesn't have room in his heart for a new woman.
True. Yeah. But she really did pull him out of a depression here.
For sure.
Because he's happy.
Yeah.
He wants to go out for dinner.
Right.
So that's good.
That's a good point. Yeah.
So next scene, Adriana bursts into her office, and Tony's sitting in a new seat, but her seat, talking to Ralph.
Right.
She's trying to overhear whatever they're saying. But the crux of this scene is basically Tony has now latched himself to Ralph and Piomai.
Right.
Tony is co-owner of Piomai.
Oh, yeah.
And Ralph is so pissed about the advice he's giving.
Right.
Because he's like, he's talking about how like expensive the vet bills are, and now he wants to put titanium shoes on the horse.
Right.
Who's going to pay for this? It's going to be Ralph.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, Ralphie has had it.
He has. And right into the next scene, he's sitting there with a new Gumar, right? Phone rings. maid calls, who is the real owner of the phone, who's the real owner of the horse. And the horse is very sick. Pyomaya is sick. Ralph hasn't paid the vet. Vet's not going to do anything. I love that Ralph says, where's the compassion?
Yeah.
In these folk. It's like, you're the one who told the pygmy to whip him harder. Like,
right.
Come on.
And you're also the one not paying the vet, which is why the vet won't treat Pyomai.
Right.
Yeah.
But he does a very clever thing here. He just gives the problem to Tony.
Right.
Tony wants to be co-owner? Fine.
Totally clever and kind of passive aggressive. Yes. But it's just sort of like, all right, yeah, if Tony loves Pyomai so much, he'll deal with this.
Yeah.
And Ralph is correct. Tony will deal with it.
Yeah. Yeah, it has to be one of my most memorable scenes from The Sopranos. Like, when I think of The Sopranos, I think of this next moment with Tony lying in bed.
Oh, really?
For whatever reason.
Interesting.
Tony lying in bed watching the Churchill documentary.
Yeah.
Carmela's still not talking to him, right?
Right.
They're not on good terms right now. She goes into the bathroom, door left open, hair dryer. He already told AJ to shut up his music, but her hair dryer goes off. And for whatever reason, I just remember him shouting,
Carmela, can you shut the door? Carmela, can you please shut the door?
it's so good.
Yeah.
It's perfect.
Yeah, it is perfect.
But he gets the call.
Right.
From the maid. And he realizes he has to go out. He has to do it because he's the compassionate one. He's the one who cares about animals.
Exactly. And also, you know, things are pretty frigid at home, so... Mm-hmm. The stables are a much more peaceful place for him at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's pouring rain.
Yeah.
But we cut to, not the stables just yet, but Adriana coming home. Clearly having a rough time. Decides to take some H.
Yeah.
To settle down.
And we haven't seen her do this before. I mean, this isn't her first time, we can assume.
Right.
But... this is a significant step for her, and it just goes to underscore how depressed, how broken down, how sad she is over, you know, finally being the one who unambiguously is betraying her man and also her family. But, you know, the other thing too about it is it just, I think, is the overall stress of this situation.
Yeah.
It's just too much. And as we've seen with Christopher, who is now in full junkie mode, yeah. I would say, any sort of anxiety results in him going straight to the needle. And she is under tremendous anxiety now. And so she's going to the needle.
Yeah. And then we do get our last scene with Tony arriving at the stable, pays the vet his money. Fortunately, the vet had administered something to Pyomai to calm her down. So Tony walks in and spends some time with Pyomai and her goat. But I really like the frame of this last shot, right?
Yeah.
In the little stall of the stable, with the horse lying there, the goat walking in, and Tony just drenched in the rain outside. It's nice.
Yeah, and very content, though. You know, he has that smile on his face. He kind of sits back and that song comes in, My Rifle, My Pony, and Me. Dean Martin, which we heard in For All Debts, Public and Private.
Yep.
And it really is a nice little scene here with Tony. And he kind of is in a relaxed state in spite of all of the problems at home and all of the other stresses that Tony is always under. He's unexpectedly taking this moment to be at peace.
Yeah, with his pony. Well, that does it for this episode of The Soprano Show. I'm Gavin Bowen.
And I'm Hannibal Diaz.
Join us next week. But until then, if you're enjoying the podcast and you want to support it, there are many ways to do that. Subscribe on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, all the others. Like us, review, leave a star rating, leave a comment. Reach out to us on Twitter at The Soprano Show or on Facebook. We love hearing from you guys, but like we do with every episode, ending with our favorite line. Hannibal, what was your favorite line?
Yeah, well, it's when Chris is yelling at Aid for being negative.
Oh, yeah.
And I just like the way that this line is phrased, and I like Michael Imperioli's delivery of it. And he says, in response to what Aid says,
what the fuck kind of shit is this? Who told you that?
Nobody.
Fucking negative shit coming out of your mouth. I had that fucking bird watching me when I got made. I'm already under a, what do you call it, possibly. So stop with that.
Yeah, I like that he references the Raven again.
Yeah.
You know, and the whatchamacallit.
It's great.
Yeah. Mine is right at the end there. Again, my memorable bedroom scene with Tony shouting at Carmela. But when he's getting ready to go out, Carmela can't believe that he's going out. And then also can't believe that he bought a racehorse.
Right.
She says,
where are you going?
Gotta go out.
It's raining.
Ralphie Cifaretto's horse is sick and they can't find him. So somebody's gotta go down there and pay the vet.
Down where?
A racetrack.
It's a racehorse? So why do you have to go? You bought a racehorse?
No, I didn't buy it.
It followed you home?
The horse is sick.
And then it just cuts there.
Exactly.
It's so good.
Yeah. I mean, we just really see how there are a lot of pressures, you know, on Tony and Carmela's marriage. And she has a lot of reasons to be a little frustrated with Tony.
Yeah.